Imagine, living in a society that builds humanoid robots and magnetic levitation trains.
Right, highly advanced.
Yeah. But then the government is currently completely paralyzed by the software inside a grocery store cash register.
It sounds like a joke, but it is actually happening.
I mean, you try to pass a massive national tax relief bill, and the entire thing just grinds to a halt because the physical point of sale machines at the local bakery literally cannot do the math.
It is wild.
We are definitely going to explore exactly how that happens later on, because looking at the stack of global front pages we have for you today, Friday, June 5, 2026, the world is just full of these bizarre high-tech paradoxes.
It really is.
Welcome to today's deep dive. Our mission today is to sift through a world that is, frankly, spinning incredibly fast right now and extract the most fascinating essential insights just for you.
And we are covering massive ground today. We're looking at the mind-boggling math behind what might just be the biggest tech IPO in history.
Oh, yeah.
We also have major geopolitical shockwaves that are reshaping the Middle East and U.S. politics, those bizarre bureaucratic headaches in Japan you mentioned, and a truly monumental breakthrough in cancer
It's
research.
a huge day. But before we jump in, just a quick but mandatory note for you. Today's sources contain politically charged content.
They definitely do.
We're talking updates on U.S. partisan politics, the Trump administration, the ongoing Middle East conflict, and abortion policies. So we need to be absolutely clear right up front. We are not taking any sides, nor do we endorse any of the viewpoints or policies discussed.
Right. Our sole job here is to impartially report and convey the ideas exactly as they are presented in the original source material.
Exactly. So let's start at the absolute peak of modern wealth and ambition. We're looking at the stars and the artificial minds trying to get us there.
Yes, SpaceX.
SpaceX is launching an IPO aimed at raising $86 billion, which, if this goes through, Elon Musk is basically poised to become history's first trillionaire.
Yeah, the sheer size of that capital raise is staggering all on its own. But the underlying math that Goldman Sachs is using to pitch a $1.78 trillion valuation for SpaceX, it tells a much stranger story.
How so?
Well, Goldman expects the traditional SpaceX rocket division to generate about $8.3 billion in revenue by 2030.
Okay, which is a lot of money, but it doesn't get you to almost $2 trillion.
Not even close. Now, Starlink is projected at $144 billion.
Okay, getting warmer.
But the anchor of this entire $1.78 trillion valuation is actually XAI.
Their artificial intelligence division.
Exactly. Goldman Sachs is projecting that revenues for the AI unit must surge a hundredfold, going from $5.2 billion next year to $522 billion by 2030.
Okay, let's unpack this because that breakdown is wild. You are buying shares in a world-class, history-making rocket company, but the prospectus essentially reveals the business model is, well, it's a lottery ticket on an unproven AI side hustle operating in the backyard.
It really is.
So is this a brilliant pivot, or are we looking at a dangerous speculative bubble?
What's fascinating here is how big tech valuations are now entirely hostage to AI promises. I mean, Wall Street applies standard grounded multiples to hardware companies,
Right,
right?
because it's tangible.
You build a rocket, you sell a payload, the margins are known. But Wall Street prices AI like it is going to capture all future human economic output.
Like it's magic.
Yeah. The valuation is resting on this huge assumption that SpaceX's Grok family of AI models will completely surpass established labs like OpenAI and Google.
Wow.
And they are making this $522 billion bet while the AI unit has been plagued by some pretty serious internal upheaval.
Which is crazy. And the sources also paint this incredible picture of a company split in two completely different realities right now.
I really do.
The New York Times highlights that Gwynne Shotwell is essentially the adult in the room running the actual day-to-day SpaceX operations.
Right.
She's out there managing massive international hubs in Barcelona and India, keeping the physical rockets firing. Meanwhile, Elon Musk is intensely focused on politics. He's, dining with Donald Trump and attending high-level summits in China.
It creates a really fascinating operational tension. You have this quiet, hyper-competent logistics engine running the aerospace side.
Which is hard enough to do.
Oh, incredibly hard. And that engine is funding a wildly speculative AI ambition driven by a highly political CEO.
Yeah.
And the source material actually buries a profound irony regarding this whole AI arms
Oh,
race.
really? What's that?
Well, to build these models, you need immense computing power. So Musk has rented out the Colossus One data centers. This is a massive facility in Memphis.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He rented it to rival AI firm Anthropic because it was currently underutilized by his own team.
Wait, he rented it to a direct competitor?
Yes. And at the exact same time, Anthropic is actively begging top AI labs to weigh slowing down the pace of development due to extreme societal risks.
You cannot make this up. So SpaceX is banking its entire $1 trillion financial future on accelerating AI as fast as humanly possible,
correct,
just to hit a $500 billion revenue target.
Exactly.
But the very company renting their server space is out there waving a red flag saying, hey, we are moving too fast and we might break society.
It's incredible. Limitless financial ambition is crashing directly into existential risk, and it is all housed under one roof in Memphis.
Which brings us crashing back down to Earth, because while these tech billionaires are, you know, debating theoretical AI risks in orbital data centers, the rest of the world's front pages are dominated by grueling, immediate geopolitical realities.
They really are.
The massive sums of money flowing into tech stand in such a sharp contrast to the economic fallout we are seeing globally right now.
And we can trace those ripple effects directly down to the grocery store.
Right.
According to Folha de São Paulo, Brazil is facing food inflation that is jumping up to 7% for the second half of this year.
7% is huge for food.
It's massive. And economists are blaming a collision of two major forces. First, you have the El Nino climate phenomenon disrupting rain patterns and lowering crop yields.
Okay, that makes sense.
But that is combining directly with the unresolved U.S. and Israel war against Iran, which is severely fracturing global productive chains.
But wait, how exactly does a conflict in the Middle East spike the price of a bag of rice or beans in Sao Paulo?
It all comes down to the fragile mechanics of global shipping. The conflict in the Middle East forces massive cargo ships to abandon traditional, efficient routes like the Red Sea.
It's too dangerous.
Exactly. So they have to reroute thousands of miles around the Horn of Africa.
Wow.
That burns infinitely more fuel, it skyrockets insurance premiums, and it delays fertilizer shipments to agricultural hubs in South America.
So the farmer pays more for fertilizer, and then the consumer pays more for food.
Precisely. The geopolitical friction is passed directly to the consumer in the form of inflation. And on the ground in the Middle East itself, the tactical realities are shifting fast.
Yeah, I saw this.
The New York Times reports that Hezbollah is utilizing a relentless onslaught of fiber optic drones. And this is exposing some significant cracks in Israeli defenses.
So wait, fiber optic drones? Why are those suddenly changing the landscape of the conflict?
Well, traditional drones, they rely on radio frequencies, right?
Right.
And advanced militaries can easily detect those, or jam them, or even hijack them using electronic warfare.
Sure, because it's just a signal in the air.
Exactly. But a fiber optic drone actually spools out a physical microscopic glass wire as it flies.
Wait, like actual physical wire? Trailing behind it.
Yes, literally trailing behind it. The pilot's commands and the video feed travel entirely through light pulses inside that physical wire.
That is wild.
It means there is no radio signal to jam. It completely bypasses millions of dollars of advanced air defense systems with basically a spool of high-tech fishing line.
Wow. And while this tactical escalation is unfolding, the diplomatic front seems to be entirely stalled. The French paper Le Monde describes the peace talks in Lebanon as a tromloy, like an optical illusion.
An illusion, yeah. Israel wants to establish pilot zones, while Hezbollah is demanding a full Israeli withdrawal.
And that intractable conflict is causing huge political shockwaves back in Washington, D.C., heavily impacting the Trump administration.
It is.
I mean, the GOP is openly fracturing over the president's foreign and domestic policies. We have four House Republicans who actually voted with Democrats to demand the withdrawal of U.S. forces from the Iran conflict.
That's a major break in ranks.
Plus, there is a revolt against a $1.8 billion fund that's meant to reward Trump supporters who claim political persecution.
Right.
And his appointment of Bill Polt as acting director of national intelligence is facing fierce resistance. Oh, and John Bolton, his former national security advisor, is pleading guilty to mishandling classified information over a critical book.
The domestic political coalition is under immense strain right now.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Looking at the lawmakers who actually voted with Democrats on the Iran withdrawal, are we seriously calling this an ideological shift regarding executive power?
Well,
because looking closely at the roster, it seems a lot like politicians who just aren't seeking re-election. They're suddenly finding their courage to vote against the party line because they no longer have to face primary voters.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, individual motivations might lean towards self-preservation, sure, but the underlying pattern of fracture is undeniable.
Kind of.
International conflicts inevitably test domestic unity. When a war drags on, and especially when it starts inflating the cost of groceries, foreign policy fatigue sets in.
People get tired of paying for it at the checkout line.
Exactly. And you combine that fatigue with aggressive domestic tactics, like the $1.8 billion fund, and you test the absolute limits of party loyalty. The administration operates with a highly unilateral style, and we are finally seeing the structural boundaries of that approach.
So you have a public that's stressed by global food inflation, they're frightened by unjammable drone warfare, and they're watching their political institutions basically fracture.
It's a lot.
The public trust in massive institutions is hanging by a thread right now. So how does the scientific community, for example, try to win that trust back?
That is the million-dollar question.
The Wall Street Journal actually has an incredibly surprising headline today about exactly this. Over 35,000 scientists and researchers are currently taking improv comedy classes.
Yes. Physicists, neuroscientists, and engineers are stepping into studios to learn the yes-and technique from professional actors.
The example of the piece is so wild. Annalisa Simimi, she's a neuroscientist who studies brain cells in mice.
Mm-hmm.
She was tasked with pitching a completely nonsensical product to her colleagues. So she invented a hammer humidifier.
Hammer humidifier.
Yeah, she pitched it as a top-rated humidifier in Arizona that doubles as a self-defense weapon. And she got a huge laugh. But wait, if you are a patient looking for serious medical answers, doesn't watching a neuroscientist act like a stand-up comedian risk undermining the very credibility they are trying to save?
It absolutely would if the goal was actually to be funny.
Oh, it's not.
No, improv isn't actually about comedy. It is a structural exercise in empathy and active listening.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Think about it. Scientists are trained to communicate in dense, alienating academic jargon. They talk at people, not with them.
Right, it can feel very condescending, even if they don't mean it to.
Exactly. Improv forces them to read an audience, strip away the jargon, and connect human to human. And looking at the medical stories in today's papers, this communication upgrade is an absolute necessity.
Why is it so urgent right now?
Because science is currently operating on two very different fronts.
The miraculous benchwork versus the public arena.
Exactly. On the benchwork front, the New York Times reported on a massive study in the journal Cell. 80 researchers across four continents have identified blood proteins that can accurately predict lung cancer more than 5 years before a diagnosis.
Wow.
5 years.
Yes. And they also found that existing anti-inflammatory drugs might even reduce the risk.
So how do a few proteins predict cancer half a decade early?
These proteins act as a...
Very. This move could pave the way for the Trump administration to restrict its distribution, which would heavily impact the political landscape ahead of the midterms.
So you have a cancer breakthrough that requires immense, unified public trust to roll out effectively, sitting right next to an FDA study that is inherently wrapped up in intense, polarized political controversy.
Exactly. If those researchers sound like textbook reading robots, their brilliant benchwork gets entirely swallowed by the political noise. Taking an improv class is a desperate structural attempt to bridge that gap and ensure the science can survive the public arena.
We've talked a lot about how governments handle massive crises and how scientists are trying to relate to us. Let's look at what happens when systemic pressure trickles down to the absolute most mundane parts of daily life.
It's fascinating how people cope.
Our sources show two incredibly different cultural coping mechanisms for dealing with overwhelming systems. Let's start with that paradox in Japan we mentioned earlier.
Right. The Japan Times outlines a situation of sheer bureaucratic stagnation.
Over a grocery tax.
Yes. Prime Minister Sane Takaichi promised to cut the consumption tax on food to ease the financial burden on households. But implementing it has become a logistical nightmare entirely because of cash registers.
Cash registers.
Yeah. Japan has a split consumption tax system. It's 10% for dine-in and 8% for takeout.
Okay, so to change that system nationwide, manufacturers of cash registers have told the government they need up to a full year just to revise the software. Why does a simple math change take 12 months?
Because we aren't talking about updating an app on a smartphone. We are talking about legacy firmware hard-coded into millions of physical point-of-sale machines across the entire country.
Oh, wow.
The split tax was originally designed to be nuanced and fair, but creating fair rules on top of ancient hardware means the physical machines literally cannot process the new tax codes. Plus, cutting the tax on food will result in a 4 trillion yen drop in government revenue.
4 trillion.
Yeah, and that was originally earmarked for Social Security.
So what does this all mean? Japan, an immensely advanced society, cannot fulfill a promise to its citizens because the grocery store receipt printers are basically holding the national budget hostage.
Exactly.
Now compare that paralyzing bureaucracy to what is happening right next door in China. According to China Daily, millions of students and parents are preparing for the Gaokao, the notoriously brutal National College Entrance Exam.
The pressure is unimaginable.
But they aren't paralyzed by the system. They are fiercely leaning into cultural luck.
Yeah, parents are buying modernized versions of the traditional kipao dress because the name sounds like the phrase for winning from the outset.
I love that. Florists are also selling out of sunflowers because their Chinese name connects to the idiom for winning first place. And bakeries are pushing these Ding Sheng Gao pastries, which translates to certain victory.
They're even buying plush keychains shaped like Zongzi dumplings because the name carries a pun for academic success.
This raises an important question for all of us. How do we process systemic stress?
It really does. In Japan, the attempt to manage an economy relies on a hyper-complex tax code and software infrastructure that eventually becomes just too rigid to move.
Right.
In China, faced with an academic system that essentially dictates a child's entire future, parents are seeking a sliver of control through ancient linguistic puns and lucky pastries.
Yeah, because what else can you do?
Exactly. Underneath both stories, humans are desperately trying to find a sense of agency when the machine they live inside just feels too big to fight.
You know, whether it's the pressure of an exam, the frustration of broken government software, or even the devastation of war in the Middle East, few people have ever captured that reality, quite like the woman dominating the global obituaries today.
Yes, Marjane Satrapi.
The Iranian-French author and filmmaker. She has died in Paris at the age of 56.
Her passing is front page news globally. You see it featured in Le Monde, FAZ in Germany, El País, Times of India, Corriere della Sera, The Wall Street Journal, and Folha de São Paulo.
She created the graphic novel series Persepolis, which was published between 2000 and 2003.
An incredible work.
It really was. It chronicles her childhood growing up under the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran and her subsequent life in exile in Europe. When the news gives us overwhelming statistics about the Middle East, Satrapi gave us the eyes of a child.
She really did.
She cut through the geopolitical noise to show the defiant, ordinary, and often very funny human spirit.
The timing of her passing carries a profound, tragic irony.
How so?
Well, Satrapi leaves us at a moment when the world is once again intensely gripped by conflict involving Iran and its neighbors. Her legacy is a vital reminder that behind every massive geopolitical headline we unpack today regarding proxy wars and supply chains, there are millions of ordinary people just trying to live their lives.
That is so true. We have covered a massive amount of ground today for you. We navigated the multi-billion-dollar promises of AI and the global shipping disruptions caused by war.
Yeah.
We explored the fracturing of political alliances, scientists learning improv just to relate to us, parents buying lucky sunflowers, and the loss of a truly visionary artist.
It's been a lot, and I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
Go for it.
We started this deep dive talking about a company trying to raise $86 billion to build artificial intelligence to supposedly solve humanity's problems.
Right.
But looking across all these front pages, the most powerful and enduring tool we have to navigate this chaos might not be artificial intelligence at all.
What is it then?
It is human connection, whether it's learning to laugh together in an improv class to build trust, handing a stressed student a lucky pastry, or drawing a comic book that touches the world.
I love that. When the world is spinning wildly, we don't necessarily need a better machine to find our way. We just need to look at each other.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the sources. Keep exploring, keep questioning, and we will catch you next time.